All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode, I think, 117 or something like that. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. I hope you guys like the new intro music. That is Into the Apocalypse by our friend Realmtrotter. He made that one specifically for the show, and we're really grateful for it. We like it. Trying to figure out some video, some audio editing stuff, guys. Trying to figure out how to do some audio clips during the show. So, working on that. And, I guess Lonnie from Greener Postures is here. Lonnie, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
What's going on, bro?
Not much. It's been a crazy day.
Oh yeah. Okay, Deborah has just entered. Deborah, are you there? Deborah's muted. She's there. She's got her headphones on. Can you hear us, Deborah?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
How are you feeling?
Pretty good. How about you?
I feel great.
Awesome. How come you feel great?
I just got a lot to feel great about.
Good. That's awesome.
Cut-X had a crazy day. He was just going to explain it, and then you interrupted. So let's hear about it.
Okay, let's hear it.
Give me one sec. I just got to change the setting here.
Okay, you look good to me. Your name is correct now.
Greener Pastures. Very postures.
Hey, Deborah, do you want to do a fermentation workshop tomorrow?
Ooh, you should.
Tell me about it.
Well, Chud X's fantastic wife, Lanny, is doing a Zoom workshop for beginning food preservation canning, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm enrolled. Lots of other cool people are going to be there. It's finally the opportunity that you've been waiting for to learn how to take your food into your own hands.
Food security into your own hands. Yeah.
What She's time is it?
It's at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
It
costs $30. I'll pay for it for you.
Oh no, I can pay it myself.
Are you sure?
I know. Well,
fixed income, right?
Yeah. I'm gonna have to move some things around. So, no wonder my ear thing was backwards. Didn't feel right. There, is that better? Yeah, oh my God, that's so much better. How can I text you, Adam, and then you can tell me how to join in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If that's all right, because I have something on the calendar tomorrow.
If you want to do it, I can arrange for it. I can pay Lanny, and you can just pay me back, and we'll send you the Zoom link.
Okay. All right.
That's simple.
Yeah.
Well, look who it is. Look who just arrived home.
Hey! Look at you.
I'm going to go spend time with Lyle before the sun goes down.
Lyle's the new lamb that we had.
Lamb.
We had him on, dude. Wednesday morning. I think we had him Wednesday or Thursday. What day did we have him on, Emily? Thursday?
I think Thursday.
Thursday, I think we had him.
Sweet.
Yeah, he's a healthy little guy. He's been he was making it. He was born on a beautiful 72 degree day, and it was great. It was cool. It was like Laverne's mom knew like when actual spring was gonna be, and nature just worked. Yeah. It'd been like cold and rainy, like really rainy and hail every day. And then we had one day of 72 degree weather. And I woke up in the morning and I went and I looked outside and I saw a little lamb standing there.
So it happened in the night?
I think it happened in the early morning before I woke up. Emily had the day off, so I slept in a little bit till like 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. And he was just out there. And it's so cool. It's so cool.
Was he standing?
Yeah. Stumbling around.
Oh, that's so amazing.
It's so crazy how advanced they are, like right out of the gate.
Well, know? it's I mean, look at his body size compared to her body size, compared then to a human infant and us. You know, we're born way premature.
Yeah.
That's why we can't hold our head up and walk, because I've got this whole theory for us. Although it's not my theory. I read it. I have to be honest.
Yeah.
That when we went from four legs to two legs and our anatomy changed, the whole birthing process had to change, and we could no longer give birth to babies that were the large. Correct size,
yeah.
right? Because it just was impossible. So they are, human babies are born greatly premature. We're the only animals that can't get up and walk and kind of figure out the world.
I heard something that like coincides with that. And I'm not sure what to make of it anymore, but a long time ago I heard it and it made a lot of sense to me. And that was that, and I don't know if this is true, but that monkeys, their gestation period is like, it's over a year. I want to say it's like closer to like 16 or 18 months or something like that. Uh-huh. So when they come out, they're much more developed, and they can walk and they can climb and they can do things that our babies can't. And that was told to me in this context of like, that's what makes humans different and smart, because before we're ready to come out, we come out and we start teaching and learning and getting this cerebral exercise that most animals don't have.
Because they skip over that portion.
Yeah, we're more feeble when we come out, but because we're taken care of by our mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and everyone else, we start to learn, and it gives us this massive head start in our head, our head start. And
that's kind of neat.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I put full stock into that anymore, but when I first heard that, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. And that works with what you're saying too. You know, it's like that.
Yeah.
It's that whole idea that most other animals, they come out ready to go.
Yeah.
But they also never have they don't seem to have the levels of emotions that we have, and certainly not the articulating abilities that we have, and you know, small motor skills and like all these other things that we seem to exceed at that other animal realms don't even
opposable
come close to.
Thumbs.
Yeah.
But that's all dependent on Darwinian evolution. Yeah,
exactly. When so I first heard that,
how I feel about that either. So
yeah, I haven't really revisited that since I've revisited and rethought a lot about evolution and other things. That was when I was still certain that we evolved from apes, and that, you know, we went from caveman to hunter-gatherer to where we're at now. So I don't know if the story is that simple, but boy, it made sense to me at the time.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, we interrupted you, Chedex. What was crazy about your day?
Yeah, tell us about your day.
Oh, I mean, it was stupid. It was a work day, you know.
Yeah, just a lot of stuff all at once, huh?
I got up at 3 a.m. thanks to a dog that needed to use the restroom. But it was awesome because I got to see the half moon while it was just setting. It was down really low, really huge, bright orange. It was kind of rad. I had every intention of going right back to sleep at that time, but after seeing that and being outside for a little bit, I was awake. Then I went to work early, and work was crazy and all that kind of stuff.
Got it.
You know, and then kids and fun stuff at home.
Yeah.
When I say a crazy day, I just mean a busy day.
Yeah, it's a normal busy day.
Yeah.
I listened to your episode of Hidden in Plain Sight with Moral Bob today.
Oh, you had time for that?
Fantastic. Yeah, I got time. I got time every day. For sure. I got nothing but time.
That's awesome.
It was really good, man. Yeah. It was a great conversation. You guys talking about all sorts of stuff, and then talking, just hearing you guys talk about the sky and the moon and what's going on up there. And it made me feel inadequate, because I have not, I'm new to trying to figure out what's going on up there.
Yeah.
And I've been aware of how much I've neglected it for the past, you know, 40 years of my life.
Yeah, we all do for a long time.
And like, I still do. And I still like, I think I'm going to start setting like 2 hour alarms on my phone just so like that say like look up.
Yeah, just take a look up.
Like
not like that hours. Not like that movie, Don't Look Up.
Yeah, go outside and look up and see what the hell's going on up there.
You know, like, me and Bob are talking about trying to get a sky club or something together, like yeah. where we keep sky journals and just get together and, you know, say like any anomalies, any weird stuff that we see, any notable things.
I think that'd be great because we're in the same area, but there's a big difference between what's going on in the sky from where you are to where I am.
Yeah, for sure.
And because you're 4 hours north and then Bob's, you know, a couple of 1,000 miles, 1,500 yeah, miles way away over from there. Us, so
we're throwing some other names around, trying to think, you know, it'd be cool to have someone in like Florida and someone in New England and
yeah, we got
someone
Matt in the T, Midwest. Matt T and Ron are in
yeah.
Massachusetts and New Hampshire. And yep. Yeah, there's people all over. Check out mm-hmm. what Legs and Buffalo Rambler are doing out there in Idaho.
I bet they'd be way into this concept too.
Yeah. And then another thing that you guys talked about, and I sent a message to Bob right after that, I heard it, was you were talking about psychedelics and people that are considered truthers, and then maybe coming up with like 20 questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like thinking like, man, maybe we should all get together and come up, either do a 20 questions for truthers podcast, or just get together, come up with 20 questions, give them out to a whole bunch of us and our friends who do podcasts, have them talk to people about them, ask either all of them or some of them to people they have on the show.
Yeah.
And then, you know, take some notes and get together and compare for a monthly show or something like that.
That could be really cool because if I recall, as that came up in the conversation, it's that, you know, nobody really studies us. There are no studies on this group of people. Like,
yeah,
the only things that are ever written about this group of people are that they're crazy.
Yeah. You know, and, one thing that you guys talked about was that we're able to not know the answer, like a solid definite answer to something, and being okay with it, whereas other people have to have something where they say like, oh, it's this way because Neil deGrasse Tyson said so, and that's the end of it. Whereas we could be like, well, maybe that guy's right, but maybe he's not, you know. I bet you there's a whole bunch of other people saying stuff too, and I don't know if I believe them either, you yeah, know. Exactly. Maybe it'll just be a big mystery for me until the end of my days.
Yeah, that would be a good question to have on that list or whatever of 20 questions. You know, I'm not sure how to put it, but you know, how do you define truth? Do you see truth in everything, or is truth a difficult thing to come by? Something to that effect.
Yeah, and another thing that you guys came up with that you were taught when you guys were like talking about Masons and how there's lodges in every tiny little town and how maybe they controlled like when stuff got planted and crops and stuff. And then you guys started talking about Monsanto. And then I thought, I don't know if you were thinking this when you were talking about it, but the word Mason is in Monsanto.
Oh my gosh. I did not even notice that at the time, but I'm hearing it as soon as you started to say it, it's like, oh yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. So
not exactly, but
no, but it's
close
it's,
enough.
Yeah.
But it's close hidden enough. Yeah. In plain sight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Deborah, last time we talked, I don't know if it was the last time or the time before, Chudex and I had to talk you down from the ledge because you thought humanity was an awful thing and that we were quote unquote, I think you said fucked. How do you feel? How are you feeling now?
I'm feeling really good right now.
You're feeling better really about it?
Well, you know, I still get, you know, to feeling like, man, we are so messed up. Look at what we are doing. Look yeah. at, you know, how we're destroying this gift that yeah. we have been given.
But then we talked about not saying we as well.
That's true. Yeah. But I mean, I include myself in that at times. I mean, I've been negligent. I water when maybe I shouldn't water because we have a drought, you know, so I I'm not saying it's other people. I'm saying it's, I'm including myself in that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that, with that.
Do you feel like a rebel when you water, when you're not supposed to water, when you're being told there's a drought?
No, I don't feel, well, I feel a little, I just feel guilty.
Don't they just make you pay more money though? If you
get- yeah. And I, you know, I haven't so, been,
so
I
it's,
haven't,
it's not,
I haven't been it's, dinged yet, but
it's not, you know, against I, the rules.
It's just that I'm
just, you just have to pay for it.
Stay aware.
I've never heard that. I didn't know that.
That's, I forget who was saying, I think it was Dave Smith who was saying it on one of his shows. It's like, if something is illegal, but the penalty for it is a fine,
uh-huh.
It's not illegal.
Yeah.
It's yeah. legal. It just costs money.
Now, PG&E has, I can't give you all the details on it, but there are times of the day that are more expensive to use your electricity than other times.
Yeah, it's been like that. Haven't they had that for years? Like, you're not allowed to do laundry at certain amounts of, or yeah. PG&E is a just a beneficial, beautiful, moral company, right?
I don't know about that.
They
what, blew, what's PG&E?
Pacific
Gen, Gas and Electric.
Gas and Electric. Oh, okay. I don't know, whatever you guys have up there. We have Portland Gas and Electric here, and
yeah, we got Puget yeah. Sound Energy.
Yeah. PG&E had in probably like 2010, around that time, they had a leaky gas pipes running through this town, San Bruno, right? It's a medium sized city, probably
suburb of San Francisco.
30,000 people live there, and the whole town blew up. A whole bunch of people died. The whole town, it blew up. It exploded.
Wow.
The whole town.
Holy crap. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wonder what they had to pay for that. Not very much, probably.
What was the fine?
I don't remember.
I don't know. But we on Feed the Beauty this week, we did that. Have you heard that one yet, Deborah?
No, Feed the Beauty.
We're Chad-X, really like Lanny, it. Myself. Moral Bob, his wife, Adam Schoenauer, who's been on our show with Emily before, and False Reality Check, Legs and Buffalo. We're all doing like a round table, homesteading kind of solutionary podcast. So we did an episode on Wednesday. I don't know if anybody's put it out yet. I don't know. I might put it out on our feed.
I think it's up on Rockfin, but
that I might don't be support it. Rockfin.
That's right.
But, what's it called? I was talking about like how helpful people are. People that are like homesteading and self-sufficient, how helpful people, how that you don't even know how helpful these people are. You can just kind of like reach out to them, a lot of them, and they'll invite you to their homestead and show you what's going on. And I've been wanting to do dairy sheep. I found this, lady who has a homestead with so many sheep up in Mossy Rock, Washington. And it's a cool little town. It's a town that never shut down during the That's lockdowns. Cool. InfoWars went there. So Emily and I went to breakfast there once.
Southeastern Washington?
It's an hour and a half from us. It's on the way to Mount Rainier, on Highway 12 off I-5.
Okay.
So we went, I was just texting back and forth with her, and I was like, can I come look at your setup? And she said, yeah. So we drove up there yesterday, and, we met her, and she had a super cute little like 4-year-old daughter who was like holding a sheep when we pulled up. It was like pouring rain. And, she just played with like Tweety, and the sheep was like rolling around in the dirt, had like sheep shit in her hair and stuff. It was awesome. And I got the boss to commit to letting me get three more. So I'm gonna get two dairy lambs, a ewe mother who's a hair sheep, mm-hmm. and we're gonna buy our neighbor's hair sheep ram.
Cool.
Yeah. So
what is a hair sheep?
Hair sheep is a sheep that has hair, not wool. Wow. So you don't have to shear them.
Uh-huh.
It just sheds off. So if you don't want to like be involved in like wool production and selling mm-hmm. wool, and which will, most people don't.
Will anymore. They interspecies breed?
Yeah. So the cool thing is the lambs we're getting are half hair sheep, half dairy sheep. Their mom's a hair sheep. The dad's an East Frisian dairy lamb. Mm-hmm. So they'll be lambs. They're lambs. So we can feed them treats and get them like domesticated. So they're nice and they'll let us milk them when they get older. And then we'll have a Katahdin, which is a hair sheep. We'll have a Katahdin hair sheep ram. The mom we're getting is a hair sheep. So we can breed her with the ram that we're getting for meat, or mm-hmm. we can take her back up to where we just the farm and the homestead in Mossy Rock. She said she'll let her dairy sheep rams breed with it too.
Mm-hmm.
So we could either breed her for meat or for dairy sheep.
That's so pretty exciting.
It's all happening.
Shepherd Adam.
Yeah, I'm really excited. So
when are you gonna get these three?
I can get the ram anytime I want. I just gotta like figure out some more fencing. I ordered some fencing in the mail, so it's coming soon, but I might make a little pen because we can't have the ram with Laverne anymore because she can get pregnant again.
Yeah.
We don't want her getting pregnant until the fall.
Right.
Because she'd have babies in the winter if that happened. And so we can go get that ram. And then I told the girl Lydia with the dairy sheep, I told her I'd text her tomorrow and maybe we're going to go up sometime on one of Emily's days off. And we're going to go up in the morning and she's going to show us how to milk them and we're going to pick them up and bring them home.
Her name's cool. Lydia, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. We have friends around here that have sheep. That's their whole farm is called Lydia's Flock.
Yeah. This girl has a whole website for a homestead. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes. You guys can check it out. It has pictures of her. I put pictures of her and her daughter was super cute in the Telegram chat. Yeah. There's pictures of it up there. And maybe I'll put a link to her farm in the show notes. But guys, we have an exciting show today.
Yeah. Speaking of Telegram, did this show come from Telegram?
We got our guest today is a fan who was in the Telegram chat and just sent me an email, told me they know something that we don't know anything about, Australian cryptids. Awesome. And we're going to get into it. Let's pause. Let them in. I think they got some screen share stuff, so we'll get all set up and we'll be right back. Alrighty. All right, hold on, guys. All right, guys, we're back and we're super excited to have our guest today, Drew from Australia. Drew, you're a fan of the show. You sent me an email, you're in our Telegram chat, and you're in Australia. And you told us that you know all about Australian cryptids that we know nothing about, and that you want to come on, and you're on the show now.
Yeah, I've been really enjoying the cryptid stuff that you guys have been sharing. Cool. Even to Deborah's dismay, the Bigfoot erotica has been quite
hilarious. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
But we've got our own little cryptids down here that I thought might be of interest to those of you in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, right on. Definitely. Well, how long have you been a fan? Let's toot our own horn. How long have you been a fan of our little show?
Well, I actually got into your show through OBDM, where they gave you a shout out. And started getting onto you guys, and you're actually my preferred podcast at the moment. You're very solutionary based, and not a lot of the doom and gloom which we see in a lot of other places on our little community. But yeah, it's great.
Thank you so much.
So about two years now.
That's so awesome, and that's so cool that you came to us from OBDM because that's my preferred podcast. So I was actually texting or I was emailing back with Midnight Mike today, asking him about figuring out how to do like sound clips for the show, and he just made it sound so complicated that I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. But
he wants to run circles around you, confuse you, and make you try and back off from that market of podcasts.
Yeah, I know. So he can keep it for himself. So what part of Australia are you in?
I'm in Victoria, which is the most southerly state of the mainland. So just above Tasmania,
okay,
across Bass Strait. Yeah, so just the southern state with, tends to be cooler down here, not as hot as the rest of Australia, and a lot less of those Aussie tropes that you hear about with crocodiles and all those sorts of things. Can't live down here, far too cold.
Yeah. Have you ever been to the United States?
I actually have. I went to the United States when I was 21. Yeah. Did a bit of a Kentucky tour, which is jumping on a bus with a bunch of people from all around the world. And I did the Grand Southern Tour. So I went up from New York and down through Route 66 around through to California.
Cool, man. What was your best memory of that trip without getting too graphic?
Best memory was actually being in New Orleans and just seeing what the culture of the South was like, where you get these stereotypical ideas of the Southern bumpkins, but they're the most warm and friendly people that actually came across well in the US.
Yeah. I've never been to Louisiana, but Deborah's family are mm-hmm. from there, and mm-hmm. Also her husband's family are yes. from there as well.
My father was born and raised, and my husband was born and raised in Louisiana. My dad in, you know, the area of New Orleans, not New Orleans, but a suburb of, and my husband was born in Cajun country, which is Southwest Louisiana, but his family moved to Northeast Louisiana when he was pretty young, about 7, in a farming community.
So let's get down to business on what us as Americans have been seeing going on in Australia for the past year or so. Is it true? Untrue? What's been your experience?
I wish I could say that it was all media hype and things being blown out of proportion, but there's definitely a large amount of it which is true. And as a Victorian, we've been at the front lines of everything that's been going on with everything the past 2 years related to COVID. Yeah, it's been pretty nuts down here.
Yeah.
The worst part. Oh, sorry, Adam, you go.
No, you go ahead, man. You're here to talk, not me.
Yeah, so probably the biggest one you might have seen was when our tradespeople and part of the CFMEU union were protesting broke down the union front end. That was where it really hit home for me. I was probably a person prior to getting to this community that was really a traditionalist and values and very patriotic. And to see our own police of our state shooting unarmed civilians in the back as they were running away in full military garb and armored vehicles was rather confronting to see. And I don't think that there's a way that the community trust can come back from that.
Yeah. As COVID has kind of died by Putin's hand, the lockdowns are all done here. There's no more mask mandates. Our states, Deborah's in California, Chedex is in Washington, I'm in Oregon. So we take up the whole West Coast. And we were the last 3 states besides Hawaii and New Mexico, I think, to get rid of mask mandates. So we got rid of them at the beginning of last month. What's it like there now?
Victoria is often referred to as the southern socialist state of Victoria with its big links to China. We've still got quite a few COVID mandates and things in place. We're the last real holdout state for it. We still have mask mandates when we go into a restaurant. It's the staff that have to wear it. It's staff in retail, but the customers don't have to. So somehow COVID just seems to know that don't go near the people with the masks.
It's very select.
They're protected. It's very smart.
It's so weird.
If you're a working scumbag, you can have it. But if you're,
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's to the point where the science for our state is contradictory to the science in other states within our own country, which is very contradictory. And that's not really how science should work.
Yeah.
Within the education system, students who are in year 7 through to year 12 aren't required to wear a mask while in school. Kindergarten children aren't required to. But anyone that's in 3rd grade through to 6th grade is required to wear a mask. So
how
do they explain that?
They really can't. The government's position on that is that the 3 to 6 bracket for grades, those students haven't had the greatest uptake of the vaccine, so they need to be more protected.
Okay. Well, that leads to, I'm wondering what's vaccine mandation like there? Is it?
We got hit really hard with the vaccine mandates. Unfortunately, I was a person that had to be coerced into that situation where I had to take mandates to keep my job, is what it is.
Sorry to hear that.
We did have a plan that I'm lucky that I married a country girl. And her father has a local farm, and always had this idea in the back of the mind as I could see the mandate starting to roll out that, you know, maybe I just put into effect our long-term goal of being sustainable on the farm, that I put that ahead 10 years ahead of where we were normally going to go to. And within making that decision, our state premier came out and mandated any essential worker, which for the state of Victoria was anyone that currently had a job, had to have the vaccine or they would lose their job.
Hmm. How about kids? Are they for school? You mentioned certain grades being the least vaccinated. Does that mean people are on their own to choose whether or not to vaccinate their kids for school, or is there a requirement?
For government schools, it's not mandated. Private sector, it's not mandated either, which is probably the silver lining to everything. Mm-hmm. I can see a lot of families that they're seeing family friends' children get sick of COVID, and essentially it's just a runny nose. And either they're not going back for a second vaccine for their child, or they're just not getting them at all. So we definitely saw the scale of that vaccine uptake at the start, and it's just flatlined. So yeah. It's great that people are seeing that it's not the big boogeyman that the media made out for the past 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. Well, now that we're done with that, let's talk some cryptids. Where did you get, what's your experience with cryptids down under?
My experience started off, I was the kid in primary school who was borrowing the day after Roswell from the local library, and all this type of stuff on Bigfoots and Sasquatch, all that stuff, everything that was from the Northern Hemisphere. And I didn't really get an insight into our own mythology and our own ideas of what cryptids or spirits could be until I became an educator and made those connections with local Aboriginal communities and nations, and found out what a lot of their Dreamtime stories were about and how they actually relate to things that are happening today.
Is there a large Aboriginal community in your state?
In our state, there is I wouldn't say it's a large Aboriginal community. Unfortunately, due to colonisation, large numbers of the Aboriginal people in our local area were lost over time. They've lost a lot of their language, a lot of their culture. And in general, the population was decimated due to colonization.
Do you guys have something equivalent to like our reservations?
We do to a degree. Where it differs is there's set places for our Aboriginal people, that's their land. But recently, over the past 20, 30 years, the Australian government's been gradually releasing more land and recognising traditional lands of our First Nations peoples. So a lot more land is actually going back to the traditional owners, and we're recognising their First Nations as a whole within our states.
That sounds like a positive thing.
Yeah, that's good.
Definitely.
News.
Better than here.
Yeah, it's probably pretty similar to what's going on in, I mean, it's all the same stories within Canada and here and the Aboriginal states. So did you ever, you're a teacher, correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Did you ever do any work with like Aboriginal communities or anything in schools or anything like that?
Yeah. So the government within our state, the one good thing they seem to be doing is that we've actually got connections with local tribes. So the local tribe in my area is the Gunnakernai people, where we get set up with a Keso worker, which is a Koori Inclusion Support Officer. So it's someone from that nation, and they'll actively come in and work with all Aboriginal students and non-Aboriginal students alike, even if they're not from the local tribe. So we have a lot of Aboriginal students within my school and across the state that aren't actually from Victoria, but they're still included in all the learning that goes on there.
They call like their tribe, do they call them mobs?
Yeah, they call them mobs. So that's even part of our Australian vernacular now, where we're from different mob or you're from a different group. We say, what mob are you from?
Yeah.
And that's how it comes out.
Cool. That's a cool word. So what's when you were a little looking up all this UFOs and Bigfoot stuff, was it all American?
Yeah, it was all North American, everything that generally came out. A little bit from the UK, like Nessie and the other things like that, and Himalayas.
You have your versions, though, of Bigfoot and Nessie, right? I just
did a little
dip into...
Yeah, we do. It seems like every major culture across the world has their version of a wild man. So you've got the Green Man in the UK, North America, your Sasquatch and Bigfoot. We have what's considered mainstream as Yowie.
Yeah,
so that's our hairy man. But generally, majority of our cryptids are anything that can be described by Indigenous people as spirits, and they can take on many forms and different appearances to the different peoples.
Cool.
So are most of the cryptids like Dreamtime mythology, or, and I don't know if, correct me if I'm stating this incorrectly or disrespectfully, I don't know.
No, that's okay. Dreamtime is collectively how Aboriginal people have an understanding of how they came to be, how the animals, the land, everything was formed. It's almost like the genesis of what you would see in Christianity. All the Dreamtime stories that we come across, we see in children's picture storybooks now, it's all about how certain animals came to be, languages, and a lot of those spirits do come through in that.
So they have a view all there of, that's what we've been talking about a lot on some of our cryptid shows, is growing up, you know, when I would think about Bigfoot, I would think it's the missing link, or it's, you know, it's a monkey that lives in the woods. And what we've been talking about is that it's interdimensional, or, you know, something else. So do they have more of that belief of it?
Sorry, cats shouldn't work with children and animals.
Not cat person.
Yeah, absolutely. I was much like yourself, Adam, where I used to think that these things for the longest time were physical. They were a missing link. They were some kind of hominid, almost Sitchinite theory, where possibly it was advanced beings mingled humans with whatever these things are to create modern people. But the more and the more I look into it, it seems that these are either ultra-terrestrial, or they may be spiritual in nature from interdimensions, or something that we just don't quite understand as people.
Yeah. What's the most prevalent one in Australian culture?
The Yowie is the big one. That's the one that most of the local nations seem to have a story of, where it forms a picture of the hairy man that lives out in the bush, that if you're not safe and you're too far away from the camp, he'll snatch you up. Tends to be a story for children that if you've wandered too far away from the camp and you're being naughty, you know, the hairy man will get you, which is very interesting that a lot of the Aboriginal nations in Canada, their Native American, North American Indians, have a lot of the same stories, even to the point where some depictions show there's a woven basket on its back with kids in it. You see some of that in some of our own Aboriginal culture as well.
Are there consistent sightings of him currently?
Currently, it's more the New South Wales, Queensland states across that border up there. Possibly could be due to if it was a physical creature, there's a lot more food abundance up there. It's not to the levels of biodiversity that we have down here. So you do see a lot more sightings in the northern New South Wales and southern Queensland states.
Is it more of an area that would be considered like a North American forest?
Yeah, so we've got the rainforest up at that end of Australia, as you go towards the tropics. So it's more denser forests, very lush green. So it almost goes in line with the Aboriginal stories of them being the protectors of the forest, or spirits of the forest type of connection.
Okay. Are they ever viewed benevolently?
It depends on who you talk to. A lot of the Australian cryptid researchers that will talk every now and again that might pop onto the US shows of like a Bigfoot Research Association, they have a mixed view of it's a benevolent thing, that if you leave it alone, it'll leave you alone. Others say that it's completely malevolent, which is more along the lines of what the Indigenous people viewed them as, is that they would actively you know, if you go near them, they'll mess you up and they'll take your kids, and they're not the nicest things to be around.
Something to fear.
Yes, definitely. That great unknown that we seem to have as a collective human memory, the things that we fear.
Mm-hmm. What's the next one?
So the next cryptid, do you like to go through?
Yeah.
Yeah, we could go into, so just the spirits, and we can hold off on the Tassie Tiger to the very end.
Yeah.
The Quinkins is just a collective term for any spirits that the Aboriginal people may come across. There are two main ones in northern Queensland. They are the Tamara and the Imjim. The Tamara are a tall, slender, jet black people who are known to be guardians of children and protectors, whereas the Imjim are very short, nasty, sharp-clawed creatures that actively hunt down, capture children, and try to eat them. I do have a screen share on here. I can share some content with you.
Love to see some images.
That's it. Let's see if I can bring it up. Share my screen. Bear with me.
Okay. Are there sightings that non-Aboriginals have made of these things?
There are. I'm sorry, I'm just checking. Can you see what's up on the screen at the moment?
No, we just got your name on a black screen.
We lost you.
I'll go back. There are sightings within Aboriginal communities. It's not as prevalent in Western Europeans. In saying that, I'll go back to Zoom, see what's going on there. And am I back on Zoom at the moment?
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Now, what's not going on? Okay. Well, I'll just leave that and I'll describe them and do the best as I can. Okay. So we see them in our traditional cave art. So the Aboriginal people had been in Australia for roughly 60 to 40,000 years. When they first arrived via land bridge from Papua New Guinea. We do see these creatures depicted in cave art. So if you were to look at and Google any images of Northern Australian cave art or rock art, you'll see these spirits. And the interesting thing is, in all this cave art, you see wallabies, kangaroos, goannas, all the abundance of the wildlife we see today, but you also see these spirits. And mm-hmm. The question I often ask myself is, if they were painting what they saw, they must have seen these things also. So these things are part of the collective memory of the Aboriginal people, and they must have been seen then, and it explain why people are starting to see them now.
So the Timjim are the tall ones.
So the Tamara are the tall ones, and okay. The Imjim are the shorter ones.
Okay. And the tall ones are the good guys. The short ones are the bad ones.
Yeah. So if you might be making a link between grey aliens, where the tall ones are seen to be as the leaders in UFO mythology, and the short greys seem to be drones that just take out tasks that against human interests, where they abduct people and do all these horrible things. So yeah, we see a lot of connections between those.
I haven't heard that. Are the short ones usually the ones that are doing the probing?
Possibly, yeah. They're the ones that'll be kidnapping the children, dragging them away to eat them.
Yeah. So are the... Okay, so... Tamarin, is that right?
Tamara, yes.
Tamara and the Imjim.
Imjim, yes.
Are they always associated as being sighted together? Or
generally they are, yeah, you're right. So the stories of the Tamara and the Imjim, they come from a place called Quinkin Rock. It's a large rock formation where it's believed that these are where the creatures come from. The Tamara will come out and look after the people of the land and watch over the children, whereas the Imjim will actively hunt down the people in the tribe. Multiple stories and books, there's fantastic books called Quinkin Mountain by Dick Rousey, which is the Aboriginal author within our country. And it's a whole story about these two Quinkin people actively warring with each other, the Tamara looking after the people and the Imjim actively going after the people.
That's crazy. How, let's see, what was I going to, I had a good question. I spaced it. What do you guys have any questions?
I wanted to hear about,
Deborah, please stay on task with what we're talking about currently.
Yarmayahu. Does that, I'm probably a cryptid that drinks victims' blood until they weaken, and then they devour the victim, and then he goes to sleep and regurgitates the victim and eats him again.
Sounds a lot like.
Until they turn into another Yarmayahu.
So that sounds exactly what we would consider to be a vampire within our Western culture. From memory, that sounds like something from the top north of Australia, one of those tribes where, like you said, it almost creates monsters as it goes around, does its business, where it's quite horrifying, but it's interesting how those links happen between cultures that are 60,000 years old and still around today, compared to our own recent cultures in Europe with the vampire and Strigoi of Eastern Europe.
Back to the tall ones and the short ones. Did the Aboriginals have any way that they would ward off the Imjim from stealing their children or doing bad stuff to them?
Yep. So that what they do is there's smoking ceremonies, which are traditionally used for acknowledgement to country or welcome to country, where it's burning of eucalyptus leaves. It's almost like a saging ceremony where you're purifying the local area. So there would be smoking ceremonies to try and ward off evil spirits. There'd be a lot around staying close to the camp. And that's really a lot of what you can consider traditional family ideals, where you respect your elders, you do what your elders say, and you stay within the camp or stay within the tribe. There wasn't a huge amount of children running wild, which is where the kids that did that, it was that cautionary tale of if you left the camp or you wandered off, that Imjim would get you.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of it is don't go into the woods, because the woods, we call it the woods here, the woods in Australia are pretty dangerous.
Yeah, the boogeyman will get you. It's that central idea that all of us have, don't we?
Yeah. I can't think of if we have anything similar to those guys here. We have the Slender Man. You guys ever heard of him?
Yeah.
Kids today are nuts with Slender Man. It's like, it seems to be the horror thing they all jump onto. And every time you show them the book of the Quinkan Mountain, they go, oh, it's Slender Man. Like, oh, that's the good guy. You don't want to think of him as the bad guy, because he's probably going to help you one day.
Yeah. Right. What are some of the reports of the Tamara helping people?
So children who might get lost in the forest, who have disappeared, they would often talk about the tall man helped me. The tall man helped me out. He led me back to camp. There's a story of the Imjim chasing children and the Tamara hurling rocks at them or sticks, actively fighting these creatures off. And generally they're seen and they disappear quite quickly. So the stories tend to be that they'll either blend into the trees and the tall eucalypts that they're around, or that they'll disappear into skinny rock crevices because they're so tall and skinny or slender that they can squeeze into those rocks and disappear.
Weird.
Yeah.
Is there a place in Australia that would be equivalent to like Skinwalker Ranch or anything like that?
Not in relation to the UFO sightings or orbs of what you see. In southeastern Victoria, we have the Boom Boom Lights, where it's anywhere across the South Gippsland Highway. People driving late at night have seen orbs that will go near their car, shut their cars off. They'll be dead on the side of the road and won't be able to turn back on until they're gone. Something along those lines. As for what you'd be Skinwalker Ranch, we'd have a lot of sacred sites across Australia where may only be a men's business or a women's business place in Aboriginal tribes. So if it's a men's business place, women are completely forbidden from going there, and vice versa for the women's. A lot of these traditional places tend to be large formation rock crevices, which I have a sneaking suspicion could be high in quartz content. And if they are high in quartz contents, that means they're quite crystalline, which could have some kind of an ability for interdimensional or inner earth creatures to come through it.
Yeah. So the Aboriginals, do they separate the sexes to pray and stuff like that?
I don't know if it's so much praying. They don't really have a universal deity or deities per se. They've got the dreaming was almost like a thing that just happened, and it's their way of understanding where how nature and everything works. They don't pray to any kind of a god. They have their spirits of their ancestors and creatures like the rainbow serpent, which was a giant snake that created the land by moving its body through the land and creating outcrops and sands and swamps and all sorts of things. But there's not so much a single deity or a group of deities that they would pray to. It's more of a pre-collective religion, almost like what you would see the ancient Celts or prior to that, where it's a back to nature kind of existence.
Yeah.
Sort pagan, of like Mike.
Pagan and
heathen, yeah, maybe. Absolutely.
Yeah. Is there where you see those orbs and the UFOs, are there cattle mutilations?
I have heard of cattle mutilations within our own local area. Often it's put down to it was a wild dog or it was foxes, but foxes really just don't have the build or the capacity to take down Angus cattle in our area. Dingoes are few and far between. They've pretty much been cleared out by a lot of local hunters.
They're and just a lot of mixed breed. Just sticking to stealing babies.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Taking babies.
Remember that movie?
The dingo stole my baby.
What was it called? Like Cries in the Night or...
Dingo ate my baby.
Yeah, I remember watching that movie when I was little. But maybe is there any you guys have a dog man?
We don't have a dog man, but interesting you should say that. I spoke to a friend recently who's adamant that she's seen one, and this is a person who's so straight-laced, doesn't believe in UFOs, the most normie person you could ever see, and is convinced that she saw a dog man run across the road when going through the hills one night, or a wolf-like person on 2 feet.
Upright.
Yeah, upright.
Wow.
Yeah, dog man's upright, Deborah.
Yes, I know, but I wasn't sure what she saw. If it was a large wolf-like creature, it doesn't necessarily mean it's upright. Clarification, Adam.
No such thing as a bad question, Deborah.
Thank you.
Okay, what's next?
We could talk about, just to go back on the orbs that you were talking about, there's cattle mutilations, but the biggest one we hear about locally is water tanks being drained of all their water. So farmers, they have a lot of water tanks attached to their sheds and garages and whatnot, and there's been reports from local farmers of orbs being seen flying in the night and straight above the water tank, water's instantly gone.
Wow.
Talking about 30,000 litre tanks, 40,000 litre tanks, and it's all gone instantly.
And that's been checked out and verified?
It's been the local agricultural group have looked at it. Yeah, it was full of water and now there's no water, so where's it gone? Question still remains.
So what there's a cryptid called a tiddalik.
A tiddalik? Yeah, oh, tiddalik, the frog? Tiddalik the frog?
Yeah, that sucked up all the fresh water.
Yeah, that's it. So tiddalik it's a Dreamtime story about a frog who just drank all the water up from the local land, and the animals one by one had to make him laugh so he could regurgitate the water and put it back out again.
That's a pretty fun
story. Great story for kids, yeah.
But that's not a real cryptid, though.
No, it's not so much a cryptid. It's just a Dreamtime story. Great one, though.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Are there any abduction stories associated with the orbs?
The orbs, there's not. There's a lot of, you could say it's abduction. There's a lot of missing time. So not only will the cars break down or turn off, even with the key in the ignition, lights, everything was on, there'd be missing time. So personally, I've come back from a local area, which is usually a 40-minute drive. I was heading down the highway, driving along, and big bright light came up behind me. And naturally me thinking, oh, it's a young bloke with a four-wheel drive and he's got his driving lights on top on. Geez, that's bright. Give me a bit of headache. I'll pull aside and let him pass. Orb passed the side of my car. Car shut down, stopped. Came back on. Key was in. It never turned off. Headlights back on, everything. Driving off, it wasn't until I got home that I'd actually realized I'd missed an hour. So what should have been a 40-minute drive was an hour and 40 minutes.
Wow.
Freaky.
That's very crazy. Creepy. And a massive headache to boot for the next couple of days.
Did you check your body out to see if there are
How did your butthole feel?
I checked my body out. Butthole was unmolested, thank God.
Oh, that's
that's how long freaky. Ago did that happen?
That was 5 years ago now.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Were you, what was the feeling? I haven't had any UFO experience. I hear Bigfoot out here pretty frequently. What was the feeling after that? Like for the, you know,
somewhat- it was something that I always believed in and researched as a kid and growing up. Like I always took for granted that yeah, these things were real. But
was it? Did you feel more scared, excited that it had happened to you? Like happy that you're like, oh wow, I believe this stuff and now I know it's real.
It was gratifying that the things I've been looking into seemed to hold water, but it was equally as terrifying to know that it was true. It was always had this fantastical what if the world's bigger and far more interesting than we could ever imagine, but to have it confirmed on a personal level was almost just as horrifying as I don't know, and the worst possible thing that could happen. It was bittersweet, that's for sure.
Right, right.
Are there... go ahead, Deborah.
Was this in a rural location or...
Yeah, so I live in regional Victoria, so we're a fair ways out from our capital city, Melbourne. Regional road on the way back home at night, pitch black. And like I said, usually you have young guys in their four-wheel drives who go up bush and bush bash and get around their Forbies and have their big floodlights on, naturally think that's what's coming up behind me. And then it wasn't.
Yeah.
Does Australia have typical UFO sightings and abductions? You know, with non-Aboriginals as well, same as here, X-Files stuff.
We'd have that type of thing. It's almost like the star people, which you see in Native American culture with UFOs, where you have star childs and people disappear. The Bun Bun lights came from that. It was originally orbs that would be seen floating around the bush at night. And if you're a lone hunter or someone going between camps, that you might disappear. And the same type of thing, they would experience missing time. They may have left the camp to go to the watering hole, and then they may come back to the camp 2 or 3 days later and didn't realize that they were gone that long, that type of a thing.
What was the name of that movie, that Australian movie of the people that get stranded out on that guy's ranch or farm?
Is it Wolf's Creek?
Well, yeah, Wolf Creek.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
That was like a real story though, right?
Yeah, Ivan Milat. He was a serial killer within Australia that targeted backpackers.
But he like never got in trouble for it, right?
It took him a long time to get caught.
Yeah. His
suspected body count is over 40 people, but they can only pin so many to him.
That's gnarly. Australian movies are really, really violent and graphic if you find the right ones. I remember you
seen Bad Boy Bubby.
Yeah. No, I have.
That is a messed up one. Yeah,
it's about as messed up as it gets.
I saw this one. It was kind of like.
Write that down.
Kind of
no,
like.
Don't.
No, don't do it, Deborah.
Seriously. Okay, okay.
It was kind of.
You get a
like,
bad view of Australians.
I love Australians.
It was kind of like Taken, but it was like this guy whose like daughter had been. Sold into like sex slavery or something like that, or like had been in porn and then got murdered, in kind of like eight millimeter type movie, but it was him just like hunting down everyone that was involved and like murdering them in really nasty ways. And then there was that one that was it was kind of like a Western, but it was Australian. Do you remember seeing that one? You know what I'm talking about? It was like pretty famous. But there's like a scene where a guy gets like whipped in it, and it's like, oh man, it's really, really gross. I can't remember what it was called, but
yeah, it doesn't come to mind, but there were quite a few of the like the early colonial type of Western Australian films of late.
It was like one of those. It was like The Proposition or something like that. I forget what it was called. But yeah. What do you make of I mean, because it does seem like we have like violent movies here, but those ones are like the Australian version are really, really graphic.
You see, but Australians think our movies are quite cringe, and we have this big movie base for Australia where foreigners come in and film here because it's so cheap. But most Australians look at our own films and think, oh, geez, this is boring. Maybe we just don't like hearing our own accents, but it tends to be we have those one or two great breakout films that tend to be, if they're big internationally, a lot of Aussies will love them. But if it's just a local level, it doesn't have a big appeal to a lot of Aussies, which is strange.
Yeah.
Since we're talking Australian movies, I'll just ask, there's one that I'm looking to watch soon. It's older, like late 70s, called The Long Weekend. And it's about animals gone bad, kind of a thing. It's like animals, it was described to me as it's The Birds, that Alfred Hitchcock movie, but all of the animals of Australia start attacking everyone. And apparently it's pretty amazing, but it's kind of older and I can't find it. It got remade in like the 90s and I'm not too interested in that. That's Australian, the remake as well, but yeah, The Long Weekend doesn't
probably help. Yeah. Probably helps us perpetrate our myth that everything down here is out to kill you.
The one that I was thinking about is called The Proposition.
Proposition. Is that Guy Pearce in that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. I
think so. It says a lawman apprehends a notorious outlaw and gives him 9 days to kill his older brother or else he'll execute his younger brother. But yeah, it's
good times.
It's pretty gnarly. I remember there's this scene where somebody's getting whipped and they get charged with like 35 lashings or something. And like it cuts to like him getting whipped and like being like just disgustingly bloody. And the guy's like, nine.
Oh my gosh. Keep going.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you want to cover any more cryptids? We've got as much time as you do. Or do you want to get into Tasmanian tiger stuff?
I'll quickly go over one more cryptid, which is a bunyip. So a bunyip is a semi-aquatic creature that lives within waterholes, billabongs, and those types of areas. Generally has a territory that it ekes out and chases people away. There's an understanding that it was a misinterpretation or sighting of dugongs, which is similar to your manatees of the Northern Hemisphere, that Aboriginal people mistook, either that or a large sea turtle, which doesn't hold much weight for me considering dugongs and turtles were both hunted by Aboriginal people so they would know what they look like. Generally, these creatures, they have scales, they have fur, they've got all these different things going on, where webbed feet, bills, all sorts of stuff. The closest animal that's around today that I would liken to it is a platypus, which almost looks like it's a water rat, a beaver, and a duck that have somehow been merged together. So much that when the British arrived in Australia, they taxidermed one, sent it back to Europe, and they thought it was a joke, some kind of a hoax. If there was a physical creature that was actually a bunyip, we had a large amount of megafauna in Australia prior to Australia going through a climatic change where it dried out. We had rhino-sized wombats, short-faced kangaroos that were meat-eating, 3 meter tall, would grab people and eat them, all sorts of giant big animals. So to my mind, instantly goes to, if it is a physical creature, perhaps it was some kind of aquatic monotreme, which is a platypus, could have been laying eggs. It looks like a duck. It looks like an animal. It's just hard to identify. So it ticks a lot of those boxes there.
Have you guys ever heard of a nutria?
Nutria, is that like a parasite type of thing?
No, it's like a beaver possum cross.
Oh,
I don't know. Okay. And they live in Oregon. They're real. Oh, right. They're real. Yeah.
And they like they make coats and stuff out of their fur.
They live like on the river.
Interesting.
How far do you have to go, Drew, to see a wild kangaroo?
Not far. I could drive. I'm in town,
yeah.
But I could drive 5 minutes down to my wife's family's farm, and you can see them in the paddocks. They're everywhere. Ever since Europeans arrived and we leveled a lot of the forest, it promoted a lot of just natural grass to grow, which actually made the population of kangaroos explode to the point where we have to cull them each year and use them for dog food and all sorts of business.
But they're not fit for human consumption?
They are. You can buy kangaroo meat. It's still considered to be a rare meat to eat, even in our own country.
I've had a kangaroo burger.
It's very lean. It's quite good. I liken it almost to venison. D- different, slightly different taste, but very lean in the same regards. Where, as Westerners or Anglo-Australians, we're not actively allowed to hunt or shoot kangaroos, but Aboriginal people are.
If they're overabundant, and are they competing for resources with cattle
Yeah, generally they are. Same with wombats. Wombats, they're a burrowing marsupial that dig holes. They generally go into paddocks and dig their burrows. And if a cattle or your calf walks and steps into it, they break a leg. So farmers don't have the best relationship with their wildlife because we've got two completely different animals and biodiversity clashing for one space, which doesn't seem to work out, unfortunately.
Wombats are cute.
They are very cute. My father tells me a story of he had one as a kid and he brought it home and it dug a burrow around the front porch and the front porch fell to the side.
Oops. Are quokka in Australia?
They are. They're a small, almost like a wallaby-sized, almost a rat-looking creature. But even the kangaroos look like giant rats themselves. They're isolated to an island, so they haven't actually encountered humans before. So you see lots of people taking selfies with them, and it looks super, like they're smiling. Like
friendly looking,
yeah. Yeah, really cute.
Really cute.
Are those videos of like the really buff, muscular kangaroos? Are those things natural, or did somebody like catch a kangaroo and just like give it a whole bunch of like
testosterone the big red's and natural.
Human growth hormone?
The big reds, they're natural. They're from the top end, they're massively huge. They're ripped, like you said.
That one video where the one's like scratching the outside of the window is so scary, man.
Their muscles are just like a human's.
They look like those genetically engineered cow that you see. Where the huge overdeveloped muscles from the US. They're quite freaky. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then there's the video of that one guy who's it's got that one has the guy's dog in like a headlock.
Yeah, he was taking his dogs out.
He goes up and he punches it in the face.
Yeah, he got in a lot of trouble. But he was taking his dogs out for pig hunting. Yeah. And the kangaroo, which you may not know, they've got a big middle toe. So like we've got our fingers, big middle toe there. They put all their pressure on. On that toe, they have a large nail. So if they ever get in a fight, they rear up on their tail, balance, and swipe with those claws.
Yeah.
So dogs often get split straight down the middle from them. And people just think of kangaroos as these lovely, nice things, but they can do a bit of damage.
You guys hunt like normal, regular cats there too, huh?
Yeah. In some parts of Australia, you're legally allowed to shoot feral cats, feral dogs. In my part of Australia, Asiatic deer, Samba, were introduced. So hunting season. Samba. So it's a deer, Asiatic deer.
That's why Adidas have Sambas.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. I never knew what a Samba was.
So it's like a bit smaller than what an elk would be, but Asiatic deer, we hunt those around Victoria in here.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole the wildlife there is super diverse, crazy, and it seems like if you hadn't seen a bunch of the stuff that you just described, it could also be considered a cryptid.
I think if I just dropped off in Australia without knowing where I was, I'd be like, holy crap, what are all these things, you know? Yeah. It would all be cryptids to me.
That's the thing though, as Australians, we take that for granted. We see these things, it's just there, and the only things we're afraid of as Australians is, you know, being mindful of a snake. We've got 9 of the top 10 venomous snakes in the world all in our backyard, and that's the one thing that we're worried about or be mindful of. But I couldn't imagine being in Northern Hemisphere and having grizzly bears, brown bears, black bears, anything around the corner. That would freak me out. I'd be making sure I'd be walking around with a rifle of some kind.
What about those enormous crabs? Those are in Australia, right?
We've got large crayfish in Tasmania, which is, I think it's the largest freshwater crayfish in the world.
There like some massive crab? I've seen like pictures of one. It's the size of, it's like crawl, you know, like hanging off of a garbage can, and it's as big as the garbage can is.
Oh yeah. They're the oceanic ones that they're in Northern Queensland along the island and the Tiwis, more so in the South Pacific than actually Australia. But yeah, we do have large creatures.
Let's hear about the Tasmanian tiger.
Tasmanian tiger, hands down, most amazing animal that's ever existed, and it's an utter travesty that they are now extinct.
Yeah, or supposedly. Makes me really sad.
It does. So if we go back to 60,000 years ago when Aboriginal people arrived, not too long after that, through trade with local Indonesians above Australia, they brought the dingo with them. Now, the dingo being a pack animal, having 6 to 8 pups per litter, outcompeted the thylacine, which the thylacine is, it looks like a canid, like a dog, like a bit of a greyhound kind of build, but is actually like a marsupial. It's very similar to a kangaroo, but on all fours. It was outcompeted, outbred.
To a hyena?
Not quite. More like that greyhound build, very sleek.
Yeah.
Similar size to what a wolf or a dingo is. Skull shapes are even eerily similar. So it's amazing how two completely different species could evolve to have the same build.
Is it a mammal?
It is a marsupial. So it has a backwards facing pouch. Generally, they only had 1 to 2 pups in a litter, which is another reason why they were outcompeted on the mainland and died off. So to the point where they were only found in Tasmania in recent memory.
Were they carnivorous?
They were carnivorous, yes, absolutely.
Did they have some, it was just a regular, like the same sex organs as a kangaroo?
As far as I know, yeah.
Because the hyena is really weird. A hyena, the female hyena has something similar to a penis, and mm-hmm. the babies are born out of that.
It's like a decoy penis or something, and the females bash around the males.
Yeah,
don't
they? It's like
and they're bigger. Yeah,
it's kind of like what's going on in Portland right now. You know,
I don't think I've ever seen a blue-haired hyena though.
Yeah, in Berkeley, close to where Deborah lives, there's like UC Berkeley, which is like a famous high-end public university. Up in the hill, the Berkeley Hills are beautiful, and I used to go up there when I lived there and ride my motorcycle around, and they have a whole hyena research facility up there that's like top secret. But if you get close enough to it on like a nice day, you can hear them yiffing and yarfing back there.
Awesome.
So yeah, but okay, so they're getting outcompeted by the dingo, which came over with the Aboriginal people from Tasmania from
Indonesia, from North. Papua New Guinea. Yep. So they gradually worked their way through all the mainland to the point where they were wiped out. And being the dingo was a pack animal, it just outcompeted it, outbred it, finito, gone. When Europeans arrived, there were supposedly anywhere between 2,000 to 3,000 thylacines left in Tasmania.
When's this? Like 1850s?
1770, Captain Cook arrived in Australia.
Got it.
And the British arrived in successive waves, setting up convict colonies everywhere they went.
Yeah.
Isn't there a photo of?
There's a video.
Yeah, of one that was like in the 40s or.
Drew.
That's 1936. Benjamin, the very last surviving Tasmanian tiger. So you see all those famous footage of him. Pictures, which I've got on my iPad and I can't get to work, which is frustrating me. Benjamin Hill's the last one of note around to survive. And 2 months before his death, the Tasmanian government put into a law, a protection act to protect the Tasmanian tigers. He died 2 to 3 months later and he was the last one. Jesus. And unfortunately, his death was not natural. He died due to exposure. He couldn't actually get back into his little house attached to his concrete little rust cage and died. Prior to that, the thylacine being such an efficient nocturnal hunter and Tasmania being built on the back of sheep, they absolutely decimated the sheep populations, killed lambs, ate everything to the point where bounties were put on their heads. Mm. Hunters from the mainland would come in and hunt down all the thylacine to the point where they all died out.
Have you ever seen that movie called The Hunter with Willem Dafoe?
Oh, fantastic movie. Great. The only small inaccuracy it has about it, it throws into it like a conspiracy thing that a big pharmaceutical company wants to get them because the thylacine had some kind of a neurotoxin when they bit their prey.
Yeah, completely garbage. That would be used for like a malevolent purpose or something like that.
Yeah, or anesthesia. Yeah,
It's a really good. That's a really good.
It's a great movie though. Great.
When I first figured out how to stream on Netflix, probably like 2010. That's the first movie I remember watching. I think it's still on Netflix because I watched it within the last 6 months. But yeah, go find The Hunter with Willem Dafoe. Yeah, it's this guy. Willem Dafoe is like a world-renowned, some kind of like trapper, and some pharmaceutical company, some evil pharmaceutical company. Hires him. Yeah, Pfizer. Yeah, Moderna, Pfizer, maybe AstraZeneca. Hires him to go trap a thylacine because they think it has a like Drew said, a neurotoxin. And yeah, it's a good movie. What is Tasmania like?
Tasmania is beautiful. It was cut off from the rest of Australia a few thousand years ago, I believe, in the last ice age, where it flooded and that land bridge disappeared. So even the Aboriginal people in Tasmania are ethnically different from those on the mainland. Aboriginals arrived in successive waves. The descriptions of the first Aboriginals are more of akin to what African natives look like, so a lot darker, skull shapes, noses, very different to what mainland Aboriginals are. Very large mountains. It's the closest what you can get to what a Europe would look like within Australia, even though it's the native bush.
There's this guy, hold on, what's his name? Let me see here. This guy right here, Steve Solomon, he wrote this book, Gardening When It Counts, Growing Food in Hard Times. This is actually Chud X's Christmas present right here. I haven't seen him to deliver it yet, though. But he's from Eugene, Oregon, and we have like a pretty mild, temperate, rainy climate here. And apparently it's like exactly the same as Tasmania. Tasmania is like the same as Eugene, and that this guy like saw the end of the world coming in like 2005 and left and has like some big giant like permaculture food forest property in Tasmania now.
Well, Tassie is definitely a place to go to.
Yeah.
Between Tasmania and New Zealand, where all the world elites are building their bunkers, it seems to be.
Yeah.
Out of the way in Ireland.
Is there a city there?
There's Launceston and there's Hobart. So they're the major cities of Tasmania.
Sprinkled
in between.
Are there like metropolitan cities, or is it just like a little or like small town?
More like small towns. That was the one thing that got me out. And when I went through the United States, we went from large cities like New York and like, yeah, this is massive. Of course it is. It's New York. Yeah. Even going through the small successive towns and cities, they were bigger than our capital cities.
Yeah.
It was the biggest eye-opener. Australia is just so undeveloped still.
Yeah.
And we've been as a country since 1901, so we're relatively a young country, but we haven't developed much. We've got our small cities and sprinkled little towns everywhere, but nothing to the scale that you would see in the US or Europe, which is quite surprising.
Yeah, I lived in California for like 20 years, but I lived in Northern California in the Bay Area, like by San Francisco. And if you drive to LA, like even though I've been there for 20 years, like I'd still drive through a town like in Southern California that I've never heard of that has like 80,000 people in it, you know? It's just part of like LA proper, but just like enormous. So. But yeah, it looks. I'd love to visit Tasmania. I don't know if I'll. What did they do during all the madness of the last few years?
They weren't so crazy there, if I've heard right.
No, they just locked their borders down hard. That was the one thing that came out during COVID. Is we're all one Australians, and in 1901, I said we became a federation, so all the separate colonies came one country under the banner, and the British said, "There you go, run yourselves now." We degenerated into being separate colonies again. We had borders shut. Families couldn't see each other. Tasmania was essentially locked down for 2.5 years. You couldn't get in or out. They were freaking out over no cases. And I think they eventually got their one or two and they shut down again. It was absolutely nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what do you think's going to...
Crazy world.
You guys think they're going to roll it back out? You guys, I know what Chud X thinks.
I do.
I think you might be right, Chud, but my idea is it may not be COVID. I have I've sneaking suspicion it's going to be bird flu related.
I just saw that in an article today, making a pretty compelling case. Yeah.
The avian flu's coming back, huh?
Yeah, and it's very sus that Bill Gates was investing money into a splicing of the Spanish flu with H1N1 to make it more transmissible and can actually affect mammals. Because you do that for the good of the world, don't you?
Yeah, that sounds like a good investment.
If that's revelation of the method, then hard times ahead, I guess. But who knows with these crazy people behind the wheel?
Yeah. What are you going to do? Are you going to tough it out there? You're going to stay in Australia till the end of your days?
Yeah, Australia's it's my home. My wife being that country girl, and her family land it's been handed down through her family since they arrived from the UK.
Are you on that land now?
Not yet. Father-in-law's out there at the moment, and my wife and I, we go out there on weekends and help out and clean things up and do what we can, but that's our long-term goal, is we'll take the property over one day and we'll work the land. It's my wife has that connection to that land where I couldn't go anywhere else in the world because it'd be too hard on her. She's got that connection to the earth, like you talk about, Chad, where, you know, the salt of your earth, salt in the earth is, it's your blood, it's your family, you've got a connection to it. And I can see that look on her face every day we go there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so important.
Just sounds right.
It does, doesn't it?
I'll just and I'm the same. If things got crazy here, if I was dealing with FEMA camps and all that kind of stuff, I would still be trying to stay right here. I wouldn't even be thinking about moving for that exact reason. So I get that.
A lot of what we heard here, Drew, is that Australia got maybe this might be just like a total red pill take, but like the reason that what happened in Australia was able to happen was because they took your guns away, or you guys surrendered them after one mass shooting. What do you think about that take?
It's possible. The problem with Australia is that we're descended from convicts and their jailers, so we've got that collective mindset still today where we're very good rule followers.
Yeah,
we're either descended from the people who were the convicts who were locked up, or the people who jailed them. So we're really good at telling people what to do, or really good at following orders. So the guns buyback could have had something to do with that. I can't say, but I definitely say it would have had an impact. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you looked into Australian Tartaria at all?
You just took the question out of my mouth, Adam.
I've tried to. I can see it having its merit in North America and Europe and a lot of those older places around the world. It's very hard because through the government system of growing up, we were always told that Australia is this 60,000-year-old place where hunter-gatherer societies have been, and nothing was built, nothing massive, no civilization was there. We had the people, but they didn't have a civilization per se. But in saying that, when you look at a lot of the old structures that Europeans built, it makes you wonder how they did it.
I mean, is it the story that these convicts got off the boat and then 2 years later there's these massive, ornate, beautifully architectured buildings built by rapists and murderers and pickpockets?
Yeah, they were in prison. They didn't have anything else to do but stack blocks.
Yeah, they were all skilled craftsmen.
Well, Hobart's a great one. This is one of the biggest convict settlements in Australian history. Tasmania was even better because it wasn't connected to the mainland. And if you ran away, you had to deal with Tasmanian tigers and all this stuff.
Yeah.
They built this massive cathedral, and we went there on a school camp in year 9. And just seeing this, the stone that was hewn out of local quarries and the fact that they had to chop down gum trees, all of our trees are predominantly hardwood, so that all the axes and the saws and things they would have brought them with them would have broke after a few days of work. It boggles the mind how people of that time with the technology they had could have built such amazing cathedrals. And why would a giant cathedral be your priority when you're trying to colonize an unknown land?
And the people that they claim built it too.
Absolutely. Uneducated people who, someone who stole bread and got put on a prison hulk and sent to Australia.
Yeah. I know I heard it at some point. I don't know who said it, and I don't know if I should believe it, but I did when I heard it. Is there Can you tell if you saw like a whole bunch of white people from different places lined up? Could you pick out the Australian? Is there a distinct Australian look or like features? Do you think there's...
I don't think there's
Australians that might have been there.
Could have been. I noticed that in the States, there's definitely a Midwestern look with Anglo-Americans. Yeah, massively.
They have the issue where I'm... Well, I mean, I guess that the American look would be like morbidly obese.
Yeah. It was more noticeable in America where you've got that a lot of the Germanic and Scandinavian look. Australia was colonized predominantly with Scots-Irish. Tasmania, Victoria, predominantly Scottish and Irish settlers.
But how do you explain the fact that you don't have horrible teeth?
probably because we live in paradise. The silly British decide to send all their convicts to a giant resort and everything worked out perfectly until recently.
Yeah. What can you trace your lineage back to?
So my mother's family's Scottish. She arrived off the boat when she was a little girl. My dad's family is Danish by descent, and I can trace that back to William the Conqueror and one of his generals sacking England and taking over.
Wow.
Got it. Yeah. So you're not a descendant of a criminal.
No, my ancestors came across on the second fleet as farmers.
Okay.
And my wife, who's ironically a farmer now, her ancestors were convicts. So I always give it to her every now and again, saying, show me your shackle marks.
You ever heard anyone or seen anything there that there are some people who think that there was an Egyptian connection to Australia sometime in the deep past?
Well, there's a Gympie pyramid, which is a natural structure that's shaped like a pyramid, and supposedly there's been statues and
right. And there's also the Gosford glyphs. There's like hieroglyphs there that some people say are hoax, but there's a YouTube channel, Uncharted X. This guy Ben, I forget his name, but he Uncharted X. He did a pretty deep dive into it, and he kind of came out going, I don't know, this stuff seems pretty legit. You know,
I think it might be more of a link with Mesoamerica or South America and that type of pyramid style that recently, and it's backed by the mainstream media, that Aboriginal bones, so our native people, have been found in South America, where that's a massive stretch of ocean that a little bark canoe could not traverse. So either Aztecs or Mayans arrived in Australia, took people back and sacrificed them, or they had some means of crossing back and forwards and possibly bringing that culture with them.
Where is the pyramid located in Australia?
Gympie.
Gympie. Is that an area?
It's a town, yeah.
Oh, wow.
What do you guys, is Max Egan well known in Australia?
Really well known.
Is he kind really of like, big among you're David Icke kind of, right?
Kind of, yeah. Which is, he's a blessing and a bit of a pain in the ass at the same time, because he's so knowledgeable, but God, he's so black-pilled.
Yeah.
If you listen to him, you're absolutely depressed and devo for days.
But he has some amazing uplifting stuff too that I've heard recently. He does, as well. I love Max Egan. We had him booked and confirmed and everything, and then he just no-showed. I sent him an email. I'm like, where you at, dude? And he's like, oh, that was today. I was like, yeah, I told you yesterday it was today. But and then he was a nice enough guy, sent me back an email. He's like, I can't reschedule. I'm traveling in Mexico trying to escape the world. So
all right.
But yeah, man, it was such a bummer. That's my dream guest. Like, if anybody asks, like, who do you want to talk to the most? It's Max Egan. He's the first one I ever heard talk about Tartaria, I think.
Oh, right. Well, from knowledge, I think he's a Queenslander, so he explains they're pretty laid back up there. So
yeah,
he's probably
I heard him on Higher Side Chats in like 2018 talking about Tartaria, and I think it was dirt wall. There was massive forest fires there. So.
Yeah, they were sus, those fires, very suspect.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you have to say about those?
Well, they coincide with, there's the government of Australia federally has wanted to put a fast rail in for the longest time. And the proposed line of where the east coast of Australia from Victoria goes all the way up through exactly where the fires were.
Jeez, that's exactly like California.
Yep. And our recent floods that we've got everywhere at the moment, Lismore has had 3 1-in-100-year floods within the past year. To the point where the entire town's completely flooded out. And the government's offering these people, you know, you can sell your land and move somewhere else, but they won't get the property values they had before.
Right. Yeah.
Also coincides with fast rail. So
What's going on with that light rail, Deborah? California's been talking about that light rail since I was a little kid.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Didn't they build a station for it in Larkspur there?
Oh, well, that's just the local. Are you talking about San Francisco to LA?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, it burned like strategically everywhere that they want to put that light rail. And then like Nancy Pelosi's husband's like a major stockholder investor in that shit.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, I know.
The money.
They can't, same story as where you're at, huh? They can't even diversify across continents.
No. Slightly off topic, links back to the Tasmanian tiger. Over the last two decades, $57 million Australian dollars have been invested in trying to clone the Tasmanian tiger.
What trying for? To clone it.
Trying to clone it to bring it back, to de-extinct it.
Wow.
Jurassic Park treatment.
Yeah, pretty much. They're trying to use numbats and Tasmanian devils and spotted quolls, which are all marsupial small carnivores, to try and grow it within that. But $57 million over two decades with no growth whatsoever besides we're going to clone it. Nothing's happened besides we're going to clone it.
Yeah, probably just a money laundering scheme.
Yeah,
I'd say so, absolutely. Like.
Well, is there anything else you want to cover with us, Drew? This has been really informative, and we're really glad to have you on. You guys have any final questions or anything?
I find Australia to be infinitely fascinating. Every time it comes up, I hadn't ever heard of cryptids, you know, like specifically, like no one had ever brought up Australian cryptids before. So as soon as Adam and Lanny were talking about this, I was just like, yes, let's do it. Like, that sounds great. And this has proved to be awesome, man.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We'd love to have you back if you come up with some more info for us. And yeah, just, if you guys are fans of the show and you're in the Telegram and you're enjoying it and you know some stuff, give us a shout out. We'll have you on. You know, it's so cool. Like when I hear other shows, we got this rotating wheel of the same people coming on doing the same podcast over and over and over. And it's cool. We can have actual listeners or somebody that nobody knows about telling us about stuff that hasn't really been covered. So we really appreciate you dealing with the time change. And yeah.
What time is it there right now? Just curious.
It is 2:15.
Tomorrow.
Two.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. Yeah.
I'm in the future.
So who won the big football game then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is travel restrictions look like for people? Is it still vaccine mandated to enter the country and all that?
I think it's recently changed. I think you need two vaccines to get in, but I think that may get dropped completely.
Cool. I'd love to visit Australia someday. It looked really, really cool, man. And you know, who knows? Maybe someday. Yep,
that's it. Hope for the best, and hopefully the worst doesn't come. Thanks for having me on. Just got to say, this is the fantastic thing about our community. Like you said, it's not about notoriety, about having the current person or the person who's in vogue. It's we've got all these amazing people within our own community that can bring forward this great information. It's especially we see within your Telegram, it's solution based, it's positive, and that's what we need to see more of in the world at the moment.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Is there anything you want to promote or anything, Drew?
Thanks to you, I'm thinking I might actually start my own podcast.
Oh, hell yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Might drop a name of Missing the Point, Your Missing the Point podcast. Time a name into it somehow. Cool. Yeah.
Get something going. I got it because your last name is Missing.
Yeah. Yep.
Got it. Right on. Well, when you get that up the ground, let us know, and we'll do everything we can to help you out with it. And yeah, if you don't have it going, I'm gonna start yelling at you in the Telegram, because you just got to do it. You got to put out a whole bunch of really crappy episodes right out of the gate, and that's what Deborah and I did. And we're not the best, but we're still we're having fun. And,
we're still having fun.
It's cool. Yeah, it's cool when you start, because you're so bad, but it doesn't matter because nobody's listening. So,
I think you're the best out there, guys. So don't show yourself short.
Right on. Well, on that note, we will cut you loose and enjoy the rest of your Sunday. And we'll talk to you soon, Drew. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right. See y'all.
All right.
Bye.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people, all those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass. Delay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order, idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that 7-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.